Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Simon Phipps joins me. We're going to be talking about compliance with standards automated by tools. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps, episode 426, recorded March 21, 2017, Simp. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by GoCD, an on-premise, open-source, continuous delivery server by ThoughtWorks. GoCD gives you complete control of and visibility into your deployments across multiple teams. Since GoCD is open-source, you can download and use it for free. To discover the power of their pipelines, visit gocd.io/twit. And by Bitbucket from Atlassian. Bitbucket is the Git solution for professional teams. Start your free account today at bitbucket.org/forthecode. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEngine.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day, totally unaware of it, projects you may want to go download right after this show and play with. Today, joining me, not back in a long time, but welcome back, Simon Phipps is my co-host.
Hello, Randall. It's a pleasure to be sitting actually at my desk in Southampton in the UK for a change, participating in the show. And looking forward to this one, all about, what is this show about, Randall?
Simp. It's about, let's see, what does Simp say that they are about? Because it's always easier just to read it off their front panel here, front page. Simp is an open source, fully automated and extensively tested framework that either can enhance your existing infrastructure or allow you to quickly build one from scratch. So it sounds really cool. I've been looking up the documentation seems somewhat limited on it, but it's probably because I there's like a lot of documentation. I couldn't figure out where sort of the lead-in stuff was, the sort of the high-level stuff. It seems like there's a lot of great low-level stuff and everything. But before we continue, I also want to say that for those that are watching the video stream, they may recognize that this background is something they've never seen before. I am now permanently back in Beaverton, Oregon. Not permanently, but whenever I'm in, not on the road. Beaverton in my new home. So I'm now staying with my friend of 30 years, Rusty Copeland, who graciously offered me his bedroom space when I lost the bedroom space for my other longtime friend, Michelle. She's now in another place as well. But anyway, so that's like this weekend. This week in geography, I guess, would be like the section there. Yeah. So Simp looks like a really fascinating thing. Compliance is a big issue these days. You know, making sure that you're PCI compliant or HIPAA compliant. There's so many regulations and everything. And what these guys appear to have done, based on the sort of the overall skimming of what I could get of their documentation, which also lets them know how well their elevator pitch actually works on their website. Is making sure that you have proper infrastructure tools in place for making your shared keys proper, making your infrastructure really work for all these regulations. So I am looking forward to talking to our two guests today. We have coming up in a couple of minutes. We'll bring them on. Trevor Vaughn is the project lead, and Kendall Moore, who's one of the people who helps adapt it for various customer requirements. Anything else you want to say, Simon, before we start getting into the show?
No, I've been reading the materials here. I have to say I was struggling to work out how I would say in a sentence what it does. So I'm looking forward to hearing from the people themselves what the answer to that question is.
From the experts. But before we bring them on, yes. I have an important message, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by GoCD. GoCD is the on-premise, open-source, continuous delivery server created by ThoughtWorks. With GoCD's comprehensive pipeline modeling, you can model complex workflows across multiple teams with ease. GoCD can easily configure dependencies for fast feedback and on-demand deployment with its parallel and sequential execution. Its fan-in, fan-out dependency management always does the right thing, avoiding spurious builds. The value stream map lets you track a change from commit to deploy at a glance. clients. GoCD's real power is the visibility it provides over your end-to-end workflow, so you get complete control of and visibility into all your deployments across the organization. GoCD also offers complete customization for your software's individual needs. GoCD will perform tests written in most languages or frameworks. Their test reporting will tell you in exactly which change set and on which platform a test started breaking. You can compare content across any two arbitrary builds, making it invaluable when troubleshooting a broken pipeline. GoCD supports auditable deployment and can delegate the configuration of pipelines to users without full-blown admin privileges. GoCD has extension points for which plugins can be created. Numerous plugins are available to you, or you can write your own. Say goodbye to deployment panic and hello to consistent, predictable deliveries. GoCD is open source that you can download and use for free. Discover the power of their pipelines at gocd.io/twit. That's gocd.io/twit. Commercial support and enterprise add-ons, including disaster recovery, are also available. And we thank GoCD for their support of Floss Weekly. Let's go ahead and bring on our guests. Let's bring on first Trevor Vaughn. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. It's glad to be here.
And where are you speaking to us from?
So I'm speaking to you from near Baltimore.
Okay, out there on the East Coast. Cool. I've been there a few times. And let's also bring on Kendall Moore. Kendall, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm doing well. And where are you speaking to us from?
I am actually in the city of Baltimore right now.
Oh, so are you, can you wave at each other? Are you close enough? Or
Not quite, close.
Okay, that's fine. All right, well, let's get started with Trevor. Trevor, give us the 30,000-foot view. What is SIMP and what problem is it solving?
So SIMP is a collection of open source projects and automation technologies that were put together to try to help solve the problem of operational compliance. So it wasn't just telling you your system was wrong. It was actually helping you make your system right and keep it right over time.
Okay, and how does it do that?
So the automation software we chose was Puppet, which is an open source project from out in Oregon somewhere. You might know it. We took the Puppet Puppet framework. We created a collection of modules, tests, artifacts, and and documentation to really lock down Red Hat and CentOS systems for now, and keep the configurations of those systems consistent and compliant over time with one of many different regulatory bodies. So we primarily focus on the federal systems. The project was open sourced out of the National Security Agency for the benefit of everyone. And basically the idea is that you can go out and be compliant with the NIST 853 regulations, the different DISA regulations. And we came out and wanted to add on the commercial regulations since it really should be handled under the same automation infrastructure.
So what does it mean to be compliant though? I mean, is there a set of like this software has to have up to date to software and maybe there has to be password locks on things? I mean, this is all new to me and probably new to our audience. So can you give us a little bit more about what that means?
Absolutely. From a federal point of view, there's something called the SCAP, which is the Secure Content Automation Protocol. And there's something called the SCAP Security Guides, which basically tell you specifically how you should be configuring your system to meet these different regulatory bodies. They came from the point of view of a validation segment, and we wanted to make sure that those could be applied flexibly on your systems. So you are correct in saying that it might say you can only log in, say, 5 times in a row with a bad password. So we want to make sure that that works, but we also want to make sure that that works across an LDAP connection or an Active Directory connection or a free IPA connection. So it works across your entire environment consistently and in a way that if your system is modified incorrectly, it actually changes itself back to be correct.
Wow, that sounds really cool. So how did this come? You said it came out of an open source project that originally started in the NSA. This is something I actually didn't know from reading your documentation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct. So the project was originally open sourced by the NSA, and it actually is on their NSA's GitHub page. So if you go to github.com/nationalsecurityagency/SIMP, you can find the core foundation from a government point of view there. And they were gracious enough to release it publicly, and we became the official, Onyx Point became the official open source stewards of the project.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Let's have Kendall talk for a bit here. What's your relationship to the project?
So I started on the project close to 6 years ago now, straight out of college, actually, with no Puppet or systems administration experience at all. And cool. Trevor interviewed me, and I just was passionate about Linux and open source projects and brought me onto his team. So from there, I got to rewrite all of our documentation and then try and learn how Puppet worked and then try and learn what compliance meant. So after that, which is probably about a year, I started working on the actual implementation of the project, which mostly means writing Puppet modules to manage the different pieces of the operating system that we care about. And go ahead.
I was just going to say, what are some of the kinds of modules that you had to write that weren't already sort of just inherent in the Puppet infrastructure?
Yeah, so because this project dates back as far as it does, most all of them we needed to write from scratch. This sort of predates Puppet's really large commercial boom that they've had in the last couple of years. So things as basic to a system as the login components or SSH to things as complicated as SE Linux. Really the entire stack we needed to make sure that we could manage and control ourselves.
Okay, that sounds really cool. So So Trevor, you've been with it since it was in the NSA, or did you come in later?
No, I was one of the original authors.
Okay.
Government contractor.
Yeah, okay. I was just going to ask, what are some of the challenges from working in a more secure environment? But you probably can't tell me any of those.
Actually, I very much can. Okay. So, I mean, the challenge is to working in a secure environment. I mean, this is why we started writing a product, a research project around compliance. You know, the idea is can you automate compliance from the ground up? And this is a problem that's basically common across all the federal space, across commercial spaces, and they all have different levels that they're willing to accept a risk. And, you know, as part of the research, we wanted to see if we could, like, really how much could we automate? Sorry, did you lose me?
Oh, we got you.
You're still there.
Yep.
We basically wanted to see how much we could automate to see if, you know, really how far can we push the envelope? And not just behind compliance, but also behind, okay, if we actually dig into the regulations and we dig into best practices, how far can we go? So, like, we enable FIPS mode in the kernel by default and to run on our systems. We enable SE Linux in targeted mode. We make sure everything we can encrypt is encrypted. So things like that, it becomes very interesting, especially when you're trying to integrate with different customers and in different commercial and federal environments.
So I'm fascinated the your work has flowed out of your work at NSA, because I've been having conversations recently about the fact that government work isn't copyrighted. How much of what is in your work has flowed out of work that you did while you were actually at the NSA, and how much of it is completely new build since you left?
That is actually, I'm not quite sure. I've been working on it for so long that the line kind of blurs in my head. So,
no, because the conversation we've been having on a legal mailing list recently has been about the fact that when federal government work is executed, the federal government is unable to own copyright in the USA, and so all the code you wrote you can carry on using once you've left, as long as there's not a contractual barrier to doing it.
Correct. That is definitely true, and it's a bit interesting and nuanced, and that it is not copyrighted within the U.S., but they can exercise copyright outside of the U.S.
Are you aware of any cases where that's happened? That's actually a question someone asked me yesterday, so I'd love to hear an answer.
No, actually, I'm not aware of any, but I know that it is in the regulations.
Right. So now you've picked the Apache license, I saw, for the work that you've done there. Could you run me through some of the reasoning behind picking the Apache license, which for listeners and viewers, Apache license is a broadly non-reciprocal license with a patent grant built into it. So why did you pick that license?
A lot of it was compatible with the requirements around government projects being open source. Several government projects, such as Apache NiFi and I believe Accumulo went under Apache as well. But they were released under the Apache license. So there was basically precedence there. And then from a Puppet point of view, since we were releasing a lot of Puppet modules, we wanted to be compatible with the general Puppet ecosystem, which very much leans toward Apache, the Apache license. So just kind of a very easy meeting of the different aspects from the different players.
Right. And so now that would make it very easy for other people to join in with the project for you and contribute code. So do you have very much of a community contributing code to the project, or is it all Onyx Point that's doing the work?
We have a small but growing community. As the project gets picked up in more and more places, particularly universities working on DoD or other high regulatory work, we are starting to see more and more contributions trickle in, yeah.
Right. And do you think that you're likely to see other consulting companies offering, you know, I see that your business model appears to be to write custom profiles and provide support. Do you think you're likely to see other companies coming into the space to also offer the same service to different markets?
You know, I really hope so. We've actually had some discussions with some folks over in Europe. We don't operate there. And they were interested in bringing it in because apparently quite a few of the European regulations fall back to the NIST regulations when it's convenient.
Right, yes. So what is the value to you of keeping this a separate project and not contributing this to the Apache Software Foundation?
We looked at that. The Apache Software Foundation tends to revolve around, in general, non-infrastructure components. And the management overhead and trying to get into the Apache Foundation was quite high. I'm not going to say it will never happen, but it was just honestly too high a barrier for entry initially.
Right, right. So what would you say is the international spread of your community? Is it 80% USA, 20% rest of world, or do you think it's a different spread to that?
From the download counts, it's 80% U.S. Obviously, we target U.S. Regulations by default. We have had quite a few downloads from the main body of Europe, but outside of that, not too widespread yet.
Right. So, does this work? This all built to work on CentOS and RHEL. Does it work with any other platform systems?
So the Puppet infrastructure can work with any system. So you can set up a SIMP server, and you can manage any client as you would normally manage a Puppet system. So that'll cover Windows, AIX, et cetera. But from a compliance point of view and from the modules that we've written, we currently cover CentOS and Red Hat. We've been looking at SUSE and Oracle Linux because they are the other two common criteria and FIPS certified Linux operating systems, which makes them suitable for work under the NIST 853, which covers federal systems with protected information. There's no reason that additional OSs could not be supported, but that has not yet been funded.
Right. So do I have to use SE Linux to work with this, or can I just use an out-of-the-box RHEL system?
You don't have to use SE Linux. The way our approach is really like a firewall. You harden everything by default, and you back it off as necessary to meet your requirements. I will say that if you're trying to be compliant with different regulations, you should keep SE Linux enabled, but you can turn it off, and we give you a variable to turn it off across your systems. And more importantly, you can turn it off on a case-by-case basis. So you can say, you know what, these five systems should not have SE Linux, but the rest of my infrastructure should.
So one of the things I'm curious about, I worked many, many years ago for Tandem describing their TSC, their Orange Book software release. Is this some of the outgrowth of that? Would I see some of this stuff as familiar?
You really would, actually. The Orange Book release was very interesting, but very difficult to meet. The follow-ons with the SCAP security guide and whatnot really are direct descendants of the Orange Book over time, with some of the more difficult-to-meet pieces taken away.
And so what is this? I know one of the things, again, I'm basing on anecdotes and things I'm familiar with, but one of the things I've learned about when people start talking about SE Linux is the way you do it is you turn it on, and then you figure out what breaks, and then you say, no, that's got to be enabled. Then you'd run it for a while longer, and then, oh, this broke, and that you run that for a while longer. Obviously, that's a bad iterative process. But if I have an arbitrary application that needs to run compliant, then using SIMP, is it sort of going to run out of the box, or are there going to have to be that sort of iterative process to figure out how to make it work?
Usually, the applications run out of the box. We do have a few basic requirements. We have IP tables enabled by default, so we have to know what ports you want allowed in. We have restrictions on who can log into the system. So if you need to use sudo to do something with your startup scripts, we have to know who needs to be able to log into the system to run. And we need to know what services you want to keep running. Almost every security regulation says to make sure no unauthorized services are running on your system. So we disable any unauthorized services. Obviously, that's very easy to append to the list to get keep things running. But from an SE Linux point of view, we run in targeted mode, which means that most applications will run unconfined if they don't have a policy around them, and they will probably just work. The issue where you might run into issues is potentially in port connections. But as long as somebody is if you've been certified to run on Red Hat, you should have a functional SE Linux policy. And again, if you don't, and it is too much hassle to deal with the SE Linux policies, then you can disable it for that one system. And you will know that you disabled it, which means you know that that one system has a higher risk to your infrastructure.
Okay. We actually have a question from the chat room. Aspire asks, does SIMP examine database settings, such as for Oracle or MySQL probably?
So SIMP fundamentally manages what it manages. We're about controlling the system and making sure it's consistent. We currently did do some work with Postgres, but we haven't done a lot of work with Oracle to date. Previously, we did do some work with different customers, but that did not make it into the final product.
And one of the things I know, and by the way, these questions are for either of you. I'm not, I want to try to give Kendall a chance to speak in here every once in a while.
Sure.
One of the things I know about setting up for a PCI, because one of my clients is really heavy into that, is that there needs to be like a DMZ if you're going to have connections that the actual data where the machine where the data is has to be in a DMZ or has to be buffered by a DMZ before connecting to the outside world. Does SIMP help you manage that and let you know when you don't have it done right?
Go ahead, Kendall.
Yeah, so SIMP isn't going to out of the box install a proxy or set up a DMZ. What it will do is set up the base OS and the infrastructure that those run on. So definitely you can add those applications in. I don't know if there's a specific setup of DMZ you were thinking, but I have worked with customers to set them up before, specifically that were concerned about PCI compliance. And what you can do with those inside of SIMP is you can create separate host groups that would require maybe different configurations than the rest of your architecture, and you could certainly customize those the way you needed to.
And how much of this is being evaluated based on just that the settings were correct versus maybe having some active probes that go in and run maybe some security testing software or whatever to give you feedback, or is that going to be a completely separate project?
So our focus is actually on the configuration on the system, but we do actually offer a couple of ways to scan your system. Trevor mentioned SCAP or SCAP before, and there is a SCAP tool that you can download and install, and it will scan your systems based on any regulation that you want, actually, or certainly any of the big ones. So that would be NIST or PCI or HIPAA or any of them. And that can generate a report. And one of the neat things that SIMP does offer is a nice visualization set for you inside of Grafana, should you choose to set that up, which would show you a rough percentage in what sort of checks you have and haven't passed. And in addition to that, we have our own custom tool, which we call our compliance mapper. And I'm actually going to hand that over to Trevor, as that's one of Trevor's pet projects specifically, but it's one of the really interesting features about SIMP that does solve that problem.
Mm-hmm. So the compliance mapper, we have two different aspects of compliance. We have the, does the system actually meet the regulations? And So you ask whether or not we get scanned by different different utilities, different tools. We do scanning with the open source tools that we have and can find. And obviously, when we go into any customer space, they scan it with their internal suite of tools. And anything that we find there, we consider a bug. So we should be able to meet the standards. One important thing to remember is that the standards do not always match the actual policies. And we tend to err on the side of the written policy, because scanners are arbitrary and written policy is actually policy. But for the compliance mapper, so that's scanning the actual system. So we realized that we needed the ability to go and ask the system at a code level, are the settings that I'm trying to set actually intentionally compliant? So you can be accidentally compliant, but being accidentally compliant it's not good. It doesn't actually tell you that you know what you're doing. It just tells you that you happen to do it by accident. We wanted to basically be able to test intentional compliance. So what we did, since Puppet is a compiler, we actually managed to hook the compiler, and we can see if somebody has changed a parameter from what it should be. So say if you have no root logins via SSH set, which is the default. Well, if somebody changes that to allow root logins via SSH, then we can report on that as the code is compiled and basically send out a warning saying, hey, this host over here has somebody allowing root SSH logins. Now it might be intentional. It might be okay. But you need to know about that. And the way we did it was in our mappings, we mapped to the individual sections inside of the policies, which means when you get that report, you get not only that the setting was changed, but exactly what sections of the policies it is in violation of.
Well, that sounds pretty cool. You know, so you're on this show because this is an open source project, I think, for the most part. But have you talked about anything yet today that is not part of the open source community edition?
Everything is open source. The one dashboard, so we do have Grafana dashboards that are built in. The one dashboard that Kendall was talking about, which actually aggregates the SGAP output, has not yet been open sourced. We're still trying to figure out exactly what to do with that.
Okay, so but you are intending to open source it. So what's your model then? How are you paying for you and everybody else working at the company?
So the usual open source way, which is, of course, support and services. We do a lot of services around doing automation support, integration of SIMP into environments, helping systems become compliant with regulations inside their environments, evaluating those different regulations. So mapping people's internal regulations into different automation technologies, and also doing just pure DevOps DevOps consulting. So people bring us in to help get their workflows under control.
Kind of sum up how I see your business model. You monetize curing people's complexity from all the different moving parts in this system. Would that be a good summary?
That's a very concise way to put it. And we do have support for SIMP, so we do sell SIMP support licenses.
Right. So how easy is this thing to get going? Because, I mean, listening to what you're describing here, it sounds like you hook a million different parts of the Linux subsystems and that they're all configured in precise ways and that there are little demons being set off by cron jobs all over the place, and that understanding how to install it, configure it, and keep it running is probably a job for someone who's used it their entire life. Is that a good summary, or do you think it's easier than that?
It's not quite that bad. We actually do provide a comprehensive guide on getting up and running. We also have ISOs for download off of the simpproject.com/ISO. So you can actually grab a powered by CentOS ISO and just start running with it. I will say that you do need to understand systems administration, though. You really do have to understand how the system works together. Out of the box, it sets up fairly simply and gets running well. And then hooking clients into it isn't that bad if you follow the guide. It actually is relatively easy, straightforward. But obviously, the more you deviate from the way it works by default, the more complex it's going to get. And that's just standard for any automation system.
This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Bitbucket from Atlassian. Let's be honest, your code is your world. You create it, tweak it, and lovingly obsess over it every day. So picking the right repository management tool is super important. Only the best for your code, right? That's why the team at Atlassian created Bitbucket. Bitbucket is the Git solution for professional teams. It helps over 5 million developers build with a purpose. Bitbucket gives teams of all sizes free private repositories with state-of-the-art features. The world's best pull request algorithm. Pull requests facilitate code reviews. Collaborate right in the code with inline comments, threaded conversations, and mentions. Built-in continuous delivery. Branch permissions help prevent errors by controlling the actions users can perform. Get granular permissions at the project, repository, or branch level. Integrations with your favorite tools like Docker, AWS, and Azure. Because Bitbucket comes from Atlassian, it offers the best Jira integration available, giving your team everything you want to take your code from concept to customer. More than 900,000 teams love Bitbucket. It's used by companies like Ford, PayPal, Starbucks, and Pandora. It's the only collaborative Git solution that massively scales. Bitbucket is for the code that takes us to Mars, decodes the human genome, or drives your next car. Visit bitbucket.org/for the code to start your free account. That's bitbucket.org/for the code. Try Bitbucket today. What will your code do? And we really thank Bitbucket for their support of Floss Weekly. And Simon, you had another question?
I did. So I was going to carry on talking to Trevor there. So Trevor, you know, you've got an on-ramp for getting started with the software. Would I actually be able to install this and be compliant with all of these standards without just using these install guides, or really am I really going to have to buy some consulting from you to be sure that I am compliant?
So out of the box, we are compliant with the NIST 853 regulation and can be easily made compliant with the DISA STIGs. As you probably realize, not all of the standards agree. So we had to pick, we kind of picked the most generic and widespread one first, which is the NIST 853. You should be compliant with that. You should be able to go to a certifier who looks at your system and says, yep, I completely agree. You're good to go. So you really shouldn't need additional consulting to be compliant with the federal regulations out of the box.
Right, right. So you think that I would stand a chance of getting this installed on one of my Linux systems then?
Oh yeah, very much so.
there's a challenge to try. Does this also work in cloud hosted systems? Because I mean, the trend that Red Hat are taking is increasingly to deploy workloads in cloud based systems. Is that future something that is going to be able to comply with these standards as well, or do they only apply to boxes that I've got in my own buildings?
Actually, the cloud based scenario works very well, and it's one of our real target audiences. So if you're familiar with the FedRAMP program, the FedRAMP program is designed to basically accredit the core infrastructure of the cloud cloud system. So say AWS is FedRAMP certified. Well, that certification stops at the operating system. And especially if you want to run across different environments, so say you want to run part of it in Google, part of it in Azure, and part of it in AWS. Well, it would be really nice if you could use the same management suite and the same compliance utilities across all of those consistently. We do have an RPM-based install. You can actually go to packagecloud.com/simp-project and just hook up to our repos, do a yum install, and follow the documentation at simp-project.readthedocs.io, and it'll walk you right through getting set up and getting running with the simp system from an RPM basis.
Right. So we have a question from the chat room here. Aspire asks, from an international perspective, what, if any, compliance standards are supported out of the box, and what future international standards are on your roadmap?
So presently, we don't officially have mappings to any international standards. The international folks we were talking to basically told us that because we comply with the NIST 853 explicitly, there are mappings from the 853 to some of the EU regulations. Right now, the international scope is on our radar, but kind of a distant radar, as we're still working through making sure that basically our customer base here is well covered. So nothing explicitly right now, but the mapping, once the mapping is done, it should just work. The components do not change based on the regulation, only the configuration of the components.
Right. And another question from the chat room, Patterson asks, this doesn't sound like it's based on Puppet Enterprise, is it? And who is using it?
It works with both Puppet Open Source and Puppet Enterprise. Out of the box, it rolls out a Puppet Open Source infrastructure, but it can also work inside of Puppet Enterprise successfully. In terms of who's using it, on the mailing list, we've had some great responses from the Aerospace Corporation, who deployed it in both AWS and Microsoft Azure. And we also had a post from, I think it was the United Health Services. Being open source, you know, we only really get feedback from people who are either complaining or want support. So I do, however, meet people at different conferences, and they say they like it, and they're having a great time. A lot of universities are starting to use it for DoD-oriented labs. That's kind of the spread we're seeing so far.
Right. So do you have any competition in open source, and do you have any competition in proprietary products?
So from the open source point of view, there are a lot of systems that are coming out and doing one-time apply approaches. So there's hardening.io, and there is the Chef guys have their hardening stack. But all those that I've seen are focused around a one-time apply, relatively inflexible way of doing things. We're taking the approach of you want compliance over time, and you want to make sure your system stay compliant over time. And from what I can tell, we don't have any competition yet.
Well, that's always a matter of time, though, right?
Always.
Yeah. What sort of open source sub projects did you get to incorporate in this besides Puppet? Is there any other technologies that you got to leverage from?
In terms of the management infrastructure, we pulled in Puppet, and we actually pulled in MCollective, which was a related Puppet project for doing one-off applies in a distributed manner. In terms of open source components, I mean, we have around 100 modules, and we're managing all those subsystems, which are open source, which includes OpenLDAP, SSSD, you know, the entire core open source stack of Red Hat and CentOS.
Okay. And what's been the most challenging thing in coming up with those various modules?
Gosh.
It's a tough question.
I'd have to say getting them properly mapped into the security standards and the regulation standards. Some of them were quite complex, and making sure they actually function are well tested and really meet the needs of the user as well as being able to be locked down was probably my number one. Discovering that software has been around for 25 years doesn't work the way it's advertised is also kind of surprising. What do you think, Kendall?
Well, from my personal experience, I would say that SE Linux was a more difficult task 5 years ago than it is today. So I would say making sure that our entire infrastructure stack worked with SE Linux in targeted mode was probably the most challenging bit for me. We have had some interesting bugs we've come across too with some of the subcomponents that we've used too. A couple related to simple things that you wouldn't think would be broken, like our syslog, for example. We've found some interesting ones there. Pretty much any subsystem you can think of, there's at least one 3-day bug in there that we had to work through. But for me, SE Linux.
And as you're deploying this, I'm sure you're seeing feedback from the people who are using it and things like that. What's been – actually, I should probably talk about this. What's on your roadmap? What are you still missing?
Wow. So what we have is awesome. As per usual, people quickly forget what you have and just want more things. Some of the more exciting things, actually, we just finished up the prototype code. I mentioned the compliance mapper earlier. We just finished up the prototype code for being able to switch from standard to standard with the change of one variable. So you can say, I want to be PCI DSS, or I want to be STIG, or I want to be NIST 853 by changing one variable, and it'll actually flip all the parameters across the entire stack for you. And we're making that stackable because, like, the PCI DSS says that you have to do what it says, but you also have to use an underlying configuration standards such as NIST 853. So we're giving people the ability to stack PCI on top of NIST 853 and have that automatically change across their entire infrastructure if they wish. And I'm really looking forward to when they finish the opportunistic IPsec. We did incorporate the IPsec into our stack, optional, not on by default. But they are the I think it's LibreSwan is working on X509 based opportunistic IPsec, which basically makes IPsec work just like TLS. And we're hoping to spread that across the entire infrastructure if you wish to.
About V6, because I know that's always an interesting thing. And in the U.S., we seem to still kind of poo-poo it because we still got enough addresses. But is that impacting more and more the realm of security and things like that? I know IPsec is built into V6, I guess it is. So is that affecting the way this code's being designed?
It definitely is. We're working on IPv6 compatibility. We've built it in where we can. Right now, we're having some issues with getting Vagrant to play well with automatically setting up IPv6 networks. But we're hoping to get that hammered out. And once we get that hammered out, then it should be able to roll right through.
Oh, speaking of Vagrant, we actually had a question earlier in the chat room about running this in VMs. Does that add any additional complexity to it?
Not at all. Basically, if you can run Red Hat or CentOS, you can run Cent.
Okay, great. And I'm thinking this has been probably a long, big project with Puppet, because it's been with Puppet since the beginning, right?
Yes, it has.
Okay, so how many bugs have you discovered in Puppet, and how quickly have they been to respond?
I actually don't know the number of bugs in Puppet. I know that they have been... I know that they have been very quick to respond, actually. They've been good about accepting PRs, and they've been good about making sure that they address our bugs, address all the bugs that we've seen when we file them in their ticketing system.
Has this also revealed features that were missing from Puppet that you wanted to make sure that they would add in future releases?
It definitely did. There were, and actually a lot of them, we ended up putting in PRs for, which has been nice. A lot of ecosystems aren't great about pulling PRs for the community, but we've had some aspects and put them right in and been able to actually change the core Puppet language to do what we needed to do in a very controlled manner.
Okay, so one of the things... we've talked about a lot of different pieces of this. We're getting close to getting out of time here. So what are some of the things that we haven't asked yet that you want to make sure our audience is aware about?
I want to make sure they're aware that we have support, that we have a ISO downloads, and that we are actively inviting people to come in, try it, use it, give us feedback, tell us where it's awful. Anybody that wants to go throw rocks is always welcome.
And Kendall, same question.
Yeah, so I would reiterate that, but I would also add that we have a publicly open HIP chat room. And so if anyone has questions, including how to get started or installing it or playing around with it or wanting to contribute or anything, really, I would invite them to join. If you go to our landing pages, be it the NSA GitHub landing page or the SIMP project one, you will be able to find your way to HipChat. And I would also say that, you know, we've been growing ever since we've been open source. And so we really do enjoy and look forward to any contributions anyone has.
And so it sounds like this is something I could easily get started in if this is my particular area. I know this is being written to beef systems up to standards. I just came up with this one last question. To beef up, but is this something that even if I'm not trying to be compliant with these standards, if I'm just running a commercial website, that this would still give me added value?
Absolutely. I mean, the standards are there to try to codify security best practices and measurable best practices for your systems. But fundamentally, your system has to run. So we're really focused on making sure people have flexible, deployable, maintainable systems that are very stable and as secure as we can get them over time.
Okay, so this is worth it for everybody. I'll ask Kendall this. If I'm not running Puppet, I'm using, say, something else like Salt or whatever to do my main management. Is this going to be a real pain to try to integrate?
Unfortunately, I think the only answer to that is it could be. It really depends to what extent you're using the other tools. So here's a success story, right? We have customers that use Ansible to deploy applications that are sort of OS agnostic or don't really care about what's happening in the underlying OS. And those situations work well. Any of the things that do deployments for apps that aren't touching the OS, we integrate nicely with. If, for example, though, you are using Salt to try and manage some of your OS components, Puppet and Salt don't necessarily agree with one another on who wins there. So that one could be tricky.
All right. So as long as I restrict this project, I restrict SIMP to just managing the base infrastructure, but all the rest of the stuff that various install systems can do, like Ansible and Chef and stuff like that, this would still work with, because that's only covering the next layer up then.
I would say that is true.
Okay.
Anytime you're using multiple configuration systems, the only advice I would give you is be careful. Make sure you know exactly what's doing what, which is a tough job, but that's the best answer I can give you there.
And test everything before you deploy. I have two final questions for both of you before we let you go. So first question would be, well, the two questions are, what is your favorite scripting language, if any? And the second would be, what text editor are you most comfortable in and probably spend all day in? So let's go first with Trevor.
Well, the scripting language that I use most is Ruby.
Yes.
I used to be a Perl guy, but I just had to go Ruby after I got introduced to it.
I understand. At least Ruby's the bastard son of Perl and Smalltalk, so it's not bad.
Fair enough. And in terms of text editors, I spend my days in Vim, just straight up Vim. And but I must say I have a soft spot for Ed, because there have been several tight spots that it's gotten me out of.
Okay, same question for Kendall. Thank you.
Definitely favorite scripting language is Ruby, if for no other reason than it's the primary language I've used over the last 5 years. Before that, I came from a Java background, so very much not scripting, but transitioned into a Scala role. I don't know if we can count that as scripting, but I certainly liked it a lot.
If you can do a shebang with it, it's a scripting language.
I don't think you can, because it compiles to Java bytecode, but
okay.
Yeah, probably not. And favorite text editor is Vim, and it's not close, actually. It's really the only Unix-based editor that I use. I can't Emacs, so I'm sorry to all of those that do.
It's perfectly okay. You know, sometimes I get a big win on this. Sometimes I get, people who are the kids, the new generation. Neither of them pays much attention to either Perl or Emacs, so it's perfectly fine. I'm okay with it either way. Hey, guys, it's been great having you on. Talk about SIMP, and for those for whom this is a very important thing to have, it sounds like SIMP is really fitting right in the middle of that niche. And even if you're just trying to be secure on the net, sounds like something people can look into and play with. So thank you, Trevor. Thank you, Kendall.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. Now I just lost my eyes. There we go. Trevor Vaughn and Kendall Moore talking to us about SIMP. What do you think, Simon?
Sounds like just a thing that you need in your toolkit if you're running enterprise IT. It sounds like a pretty cool set of tools and something that I'd expect sysadmins in corporate environments to be very excited about.
You know, I'd be curious actually to, even if I don't actually run Puppet anywhere, I'd be curious to actually pull the code down and take a look at some of the things that they're actually probing for or looking for, maybe even figuring out ways to backport the few of those that I'm curious about to something like, let's see, we're using a Chef with Neil Bauman's project these days, so probably I'd have one of the other consultants that's working for Neil port that to Chef and actually include it as part of our tests or part of our compliances. So, I mean, that's the best thing about open source software is that, it's not just the actual code that's there that's handy, that you could push a button and actually run, but it's also the fact that you have the instructions, the algorithms, the design, which can be taken away and applied in other environments. So wouldn't you agree, Simon?
Yeah, I think that's the thing that a lot of people forget about open source. People believe that the project is the key thing, but actually software freedom is all about the code. And one of the great things about open source licenses is they let you go into a project and go fishing for pieces of clever code that do clever things, or our clever algorithms that do clever things. And I think that it's worth emphasizing that that's always got to be something you think about when you're designing an open source project. I would think that SIMP would be a goldmine of how-tos for people who are doing systems programming, for sysadmins looking for pieces of scripting code. And I would expect it to be just as valuable as a repository of fragments of knowledge as it is as a complete system for doing compliance as they've designed it to. And so that's why it's good that it's under the Apache license. That gives you the complete freedom to go hack out the 100 lines of code that do the thing you need, as well as use the complete system to solve a complete problem.
Yeah, and just even more specifically, this has got to be, as you said, the word goldmine. I appreciate that. That of specific puppet solutions to things, because you know one of the things I've learned over the years to learn a programming language or an operating system or an architecture of some kind is that I want every single cool example I can get my hands on, because the examples are solved problems using the thing I'm trying to learn about. And that gives me more of the rhythm, the flow, the sort of what to think about, I see you use local variables this way because that solves this kind of a problem. So again, if you're solving specific puppet issues, this is probably a huge pile of things. Like if we're trying to figure out, oh, how under SE Linux do I get to lock down the stuff for my web server in Puppet? And now you can just go right to SIMP and go, okay, this is how this is done. Even if you don't use the whole project, you have all that source code available to you.
Yep. And I particularly appreciate the business model that they're using, which is, they're monetizing the cure of complexity, which is really a growing business model in the open source space. I'm seeing companies in many different contexts doing it. And the side effect of it is that it leaves all the code unencumbered and open for you to learn from, as you've just been describing, to go and cherry pick solutions to other problems in other problem spaces, and also to implement yourself if you have the skills. So overall, I'm more impressed than I thought I was going to be, Randall. You'll remember I was I was a skeptic when you originally told me about the show.
Well, can you say a little bit more about what cure of complexity is? I like the words, but I don't exactly know like what scope that is.
So curing complexity, the idea there is that when you're dealing with a solution which has many moving parts, which integrates together many different open source components, typically you need a set of domain-specific skills to actually put the solution together. So a company like Biturgia that produces a metrics dashboard for your IT system, a company like CloudBees that produces continuous integration solutions, and now the company behind SIMP, they're all companies who have on staff the requisite skills to implement a complex system with many moving parts and get it right first time. And so although you could do it yourself, you're probably going to save money in the long run if you hire somebody who's already got the skills. It's a little bit like the same way that it's better to get in an electrician to wire your house than to get the building code out and try and do it yourself, or that it's better to use somebody who has done a complicated job. You know, it's defusing your own bomb is something which is very straightforward and probably fatal. And I think that the curing complexity as a business model is a great business model, because it's very hard for people to compete against you if you have got the unique skills and other people in the marketplace haven't. So curing complexity is one of my favorite business models, and I think it's the growing open source business model of the day.
Okay, so I guess essentially it's what I've been doing all my life. So I mean, it's how I deal with Perl. Is people hire me because of the problems I've been able to solve, so that they'll spend a lot less money. I mean, it might be a few more dollars an hour, but they'll spend a lot less money with me overall, because I'll be able to go, oh, you need this, you need this module, you need this thing, you need to pull these together this way, and that code's going to break because of this. This code's been made fragile because of that. So they're hiring me for my history and the fact that I've already twiddled all these knobs before. Is that a better way to, is that what you're describing?
It's sort of, but the companies that are doing this with a system are doing it more at scale. So you're definitely solving the problem for you. You know, you're a deeply skilled expert in a number of technologies, particularly in Perl. And if I had a Perl problem, I would come to you first and hope I could afford you. whereas these guys have got a staff of people who are expert in the many different moving parts of the system, and can you help me with this part of the system? And they've got a guy over there who is an expert at HIPAA standards and knows how to make sure you're compliant with them. They've got another person over here who is an expert with NIST standards and will make sure you're compliant with them. And they are able to bring together a whole company that solves the complexity of the many moving parts. So you're a one man encyclopedia of Perl. They are a department store of experts who can come in and solve the complete problem for you.
I get it. Okay, that makes it much more clear. Thank you. I appreciate the extra stuff on that. So we're just about out of time, so let me go ahead and talk about our upcoming guests. Next week we have Anchor, spelled with an E, which is for analytics, compliance, and operational best practices for containers. So maybe overlapping this week's show a little bit, but written in an entirely different language and by different people. So we'll see how that goes. And probably not necessarily standards, but like operational best practices as they've defined it. Hub Zero, immediately following that, that's a platform for a dynamic website supporting research and education. PG Backrest, which is Postgres backup and restore software. That's really interesting in particular to me, so we'll see how that show goes. Screen Studio, which is recording and streaming your full resolution desktop and webcam. That should be a lot of fun too. Just added to the schedule between last week and this week, we have Stacky. I guess that's how you pronounce it. Stacky, which is a bare metal provisioning tool from the creators of Rocks that do clustering software. Also added just to the schedule since last week, we have FreeNAS Corral. So we've had FreeNAS on the project before. Actually, it was one of the shows I didn't get to do, but we have this time, not to say anything bad about the guy we had on last time, but this time we actually have Jason Hubbard coming on. He's the Beneficial Dictator for Life about FreeNAS. And let me explain. FreeNAS is basically a ZFS-based network-attached storage running a variant of FreeBSD. Really cool stuff being done with that. So really nice stuff. And FreeNAS Corral is a new project they have, which is about building up clusters and managing entire clusters of FreeNAS boxes. So that's something that's sort of the next level up for them. The show after that will be OSCON. I don't have the guest for that yet because we'll find them on Monday, hopefully. So we have actually a guest for Tuesday. But I'll be down in Austin at OSCON all day Monday, running around going, who wants to be on the show? Who wants to be on the show? Also just added to the schedule, Kubernetes. We had them on back in August 2015, but a lot has happened in that space since then. That's basically orchestration for Docker clusters. And we got somebody coming on from the project there to talk about Kubernetes and what's happened in the last couple of years. A lot of stuff's happening in the Docker space in the last couple of years. So we're making sure we update everybody for all the really cool things that are going on. You can find out about all these and more at twit.tv/floss. That's the homepage for this show. If you have any other suggestions, please tell the project leader or community coordinator to email me, merlin@stonehenge.com, which my address is on the homepage for the show. You can also see the big spreadsheet of things we have coming up based on that, all of our schedule and everything, so you can see when to specifically tune in if you want to be on our live show. We do have a live stream, and actually we took a few questions from it today. We tape at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays, which for the summer now is at UTC minus 7, not UTC minus 8, because that's how we roll in the U.S. And it's we can also go there at live.twit.tv. Watch us handle the stuff behind the scenes, even watch us make a few flubs occasionally during the show, and follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus and at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus and also at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N on Twitter. I am going to be at the Red Hat Summit in Boston, and then immediately following week I'll be at OSCON in Austin. That's so many words that all sound the same. It's really difficult to say. Also be at YAPSE. I'm teaching a class there. And hopefully, I still haven't got my confirmation yet, but hopefully I'll be at DragonCon coming up in Atlanta in September. Simon, what do you want to plug?
Well, I just got elected back to the board of directors of the Open Source Initiative. So thank you very much to all the people who voted for me. And as a result of that, I'm going to be at the OSI face-to-face board meeting, which is in Boston at the beginning of April. And if you would like to meet all of the board of the Open Source Initiative and you are within reach of Boston, we're going to be having a community social at the a bar called the 21st Amendment on Wednesday, the 5th of April. At 7 p.m. And you would be very welcome to join us there and come along for a drink and meet all of the directors. I'm then going to be doing some a variety of events. I'll be in Barcelona the week of the 24th of April. I don't think I'm going to make it to OSCON this year. This is the first year I've not had a talk accepted at OSCON since 2003. That means there's no one to pay my airfare, so I won't be coming over to that, I shouldn't think. The next event, I don't know when it'll be. I'll be speaking at the UK Open Source Awards on June the 7th. I'm now writing regularly in Linux Magazine. They took over Linux Voice Magazine, and so I have a regular column in Linux Magazine in the Linux Voice section, and I encourage you to take out a subscription to that magazine and support the Linux press. They need you to buy the magazine and not just read things for free online. Otherwise, we won't have any quality technology journalism in the open source and free software space. So do please subscribe. You'll find me at webmink.com, and I'm webmink, W-E-B-M-I-N-K, on most social media systems, including Twitter. You'll find me as Simon Phipps on Google+, and you'll find that I'm available for weddings, bar mitzvahs, and other forms of speeches at your request and command. Randall, back to you.
And juggling is extra, though, right?
I've never been able to juggle. I had Denise Cooper and the fine people at PayPal tried to teach me, and I found that I'm simply incapable of doing it. So no juggling, I'm sorry.
I can do it with one ball, but when you start getting more than that, it starts being a little more complicated. Well, Simon, it's been wonderful having you back on the show. We've missed you, but glad you could make it for this week's show, and all of your questions, very appropriate, very poignant, very good to have you on. So thank you for joining me today.
My great pleasure, and I look forward to the next time we can get together to cross-question a guest.
Absolutely. Great. And, of course, we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.